You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinions of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. This morning, and I mean real early this morning, I did something that I've never done, that I haven't done for over 20 years. And what I did was I picked up my cell phone, which I seldom use. Curiously, that same Sunday, I went up and add some more minutes to it. I have over 8,000 minutes because I don't make a lot of phone calls. But I called up a show that I've been listening to for many years, the Charlie Jones Show. As a matter of fact, that's not the title of it, but it's Charlie Jones is the host. He used to be a disc jockey here in Dallas, and he switched over to talk radio. And for those that have trouble sleeping between 12 and 4 in the morning, I recommend Charlie Jones anytime. But it was interesting, this was purely coincidental, I've been reading a book called The Coming Plague. Now, what motivated me to read it was not Ebola. That's not where I'm definitely going with this, because it is Ebola, the breakout in Africa. That's the story today, or one of the stories. There's a lot of news today. There's a lot of news stories I could comment on, but what I'm going to comment upon is the possibility, not so much of an Ebola plague, but a TB, tuberculosis plague. And the reason I was reading the book is the fact that we have tens of thousands, and really hundreds of thousands, of illegal aliens crossing into this country, many of them from Central America, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, that are coming from areas of low income, high poverty, malnutrition, and guess what? They have contagious diseases, and the one that I'm concerned about, because it's an airborne bacteria disease, is tuberculosis. Now, tuberculosis, unlike Ebola, is treatable. And the survival rate is over 90%, provided you go to the hospital, go to the doctor, and they give you antibiotics. It can be treated. At one time, it was a death sentence. Many, before antibiotics, if you got TB, the cure, and there was really no cure because it stays in your body, can be latent for many, many years, was to get plenty of rest, go to the mountains, and hopefully you would recover. It's very much a wasting disease, also called consumption. And if you've seen pictures, the people are very, very thin. They literally waste away. Now, TB is very much an opportunist type disease, and it can be latent for many, many, many years. You can have it. It's estimated that over 2.3 billion people in the world actually have tuberculosis. It's a bacteria in their body. And like I said, it can be latent for many years, and then suddenly you have a disease. Now, here's the keep in mind. So there's about 2.3 billion in the entire world, probably more now, because it's on the rise, that have tuberculosis. That doesn't mean they have the disease. Only. But that's about a third of the population of the world. The estimates are for the world, we have a population of the world is over 7 billion. So that's a lot of people. Now, in terms of an actual, when it becomes active, about 10% of those will become active, and only 1% will actually die. And the reason for that, if you're in a developed country and you have the symptoms and they test you for it, there's antibiotics to combat the disease. Now, it takes several months, several years of treatment to stop the disease. So it needs to be treated. It takes time and it takes money. And so if you're in a poor country and literally you can't afford food, you obviously can't afford doctor care, and you certainly can't afford the antibiotics. Now, what's compounding the problem is the fact that you're getting tuberculosis strains that are resistant to antibiotics, either completely or partially. So that can be a problem. Now, how am I want to relate this to a number of stories. I'm trying to connect the dots today. We have illegal aliens crossing the border. In the last month or two, I've probably given 3 or 4 or 5 shows on that. And one of the reasons in the back of my mind, one of the concerns was that we don't know what medical condition these people are in. Are they carrying contagious diseases? I think the answer is we don't know. Some of them are. Now, what got my attention initially was the fact that the government was not letting people into the facilities. Now, I speculated on why weren't they letting congressmen, senators, governors, you know, public officials that do have a need to know into the various detention facilities that they were keeping these illegal aliens, the unaccompanied children aliens. Why weren't they letting our congressmen, senators, governors into these facilities? Now they are, but for over several weeks they were not. Now, initially, I thought, and it's probably part of the reason, that why most of these illegal alien children are teenagers under 17, the reports I'm seeing from various sources, about 20%, while they say they're teenagers, when you actually look at them, they look older. They're 18, 19, 20, even older, because the Border Patrol, the U.S. Border Patrol, has to accept the word of the person when they ask them, well, how old are you? Well, I'm 17. Even though the person may have across his body tattoos that indicate he's a member of a gang or a drug cartel. MS-13 comes to mind. So initially, that's what I thought was going on. They didn't want to see the press or the media come in and take pictures and talk to the people. And this was going on across the country. They didn't want people to discover these are not children. They're teenagers. Most of them, well, they divide them in two groups, from 13 to 15 and 15 to 17. But there's some babies with mothers, but the majority of them are teenagers. Now we're finding out, and it's coming out more and more, that you had a number of infectious diseases in these groups, including TB, is just one of them. I'm zeroing in on TB for a reason. It's a killer, folks. As dangerous as Ebola is, and it's deadly, it usually has a death rate, and there's a technical name for it, a case. I don't recall it. Like I say, I'm getting up to speed on this. I think a case fatality rate, I think is the technical term, of somewhere between 80 to 90%, depending on what type it is. In other words, typically when you have an outbreak of Ebola, which is a virus, and there's really no treatment for it, it's deadly, that only 5 to 10% survive. And we don't know why, and we don't know exactly where this virus, when it doesn't break out, is located. Because one of the things that the Center for Disease Control, as well as the World Health Organization does, is send out teams, and part of the team is trying to locate the source. Is it bats? Is it monkeys? Is it insects? In other words, they're trying to find out where the virus stays when it's not active, and what is the transmission mechanism to humans. And it's been a while since we've had a breakout. Now, this is getting a lot of attention in the press and on talk radio. And I was listening to Charlie Jones, and one of the reasons I usually listen only between 12 and 1, and sometimes I fall asleep before then. And occasionally I've fallen asleep and wake up at 3 o'clock and listen to them. But today, for this morning at least, I was wide awake. I was reading. I usually read a couple of books at a time. I was focusing in on this. I was doing my show prep. And this book doesn't just cover Ebola, and there's something I need to point out. This book was written 20 years ago, and this person is was and is a journalist, worked for Newsweek, won a Pulitzer Prize for her reporting on Ebola in 1996, and this book came out in 1994. So she does know Ebola. She has some definitely scientific training and has a doctor in her family. It's a good book to read. I'm still reading it. It is a 750-page book. That was one of the questions Charlie asked me. And quite frankly, I don't know what happened to the cell phone, but I didn't hear him initially. And about the third time, I said, oh, it's a large book. Yep, it's a very large book. And it will scare the death. It'll scare you. And you'll get concerned about this. And that's why I'm covering it. You should be concerned about this. Now, I'm not as concerned about, and this might surprise you, on Ebola. But it is very, very, very dangerous. I would not have brought the two people back from Africa, the doctor and the nurse, until they were cleared of it. And I wish them well, and I salute their activities. But people are afraid of Ebola because it's such a killer. We know a little bit more about it now, but not that much more. And the big difference to understand, it's a virus, and you usually get it if you touch blood of someone that has the virus. Now, they don't know how the person actually gets the virus. You know, what's the source? Is it an insect bite? Is it a rat bite? Is it eating monkey meat? And in doing my prep, you might be surprised, but people in Africa eat what they call bush meat. What's that? Monkeys and other animals. And the hygiene is not very good. The sanitation is not good. One of the problems is just clean water. So we're not really sure how the virus is transmitted to humans. But if you touch someone that has the virus, their blood or their mucus, and you're not protected with the necessary gloves, you could come down with the disease. And what was scary, I was listening to Charlie and people were calling in and he was setting the stage for the story, I was reading the descriptions of, think of it as the first responders, and it'll scare you. Anyone that reads this will be scared. Now, what's the one good news about this? And there is some good news. It's not an airborne virus. There are viruses you can catch, I've caught, that are airborne. Now, I forget when this happened, but it was at least 10, maybe 15 years ago. I caught what initially I thought was a cold. You know, I had the simplest of runny nose, sore throat, some fatigue, but I couldn't shake it. It took me about 2 weeks to shake it. And what was scaring me, I literally could not focus. Not only was I tired and fatigued, had a fever, had all the symptoms of the flu, but it's probably the one time in my entire life that I really felt sick. That's a virus. That's a cold. There's no cure for it. People say go to the doctor. I knew I had a virus. There's nothing the doctor can really do but recommend, you know, take liquids, don't dehydrate. There's no antibiotics they can give you. In other words, stay home and get plenty of rest, plenty of liquids. And I recovered. I don't really want to go through that. But certain people are, how should I say, prone to this. And it's really the young and the old that have much to fear about just the regular viruses. Now, and that's my experience with viruses. And you got to keep in mind, Ebola is a virus. That's what I'm trying to emphasize. But also, unlike many viruses that are airborne and you can get it, when people, for example, sneeze. I'm sure you've been in the situation. I have. One, I was driving in and recalling this. I was in an office. At one time, I was a project manager for a software company. And I was in an office, and guess what happens? A person comes in, initially has a cold, starts sneezing. You talk to him, he's sick, but he keeps coming in. Why? He doesn't want to lose his job. He needs the money. But what happened? Within, I would say, 2 weeks, I lost count. It's been several years since this happened. I would say about half the office came down with the virus, the cold. Now, what he should have done is stayed home. And what the employer should have said is stay home. You're sick, stay home. But we had a boss where sickness was weakness. And I understood his mentality because when I was a child, I was a sickly child. I had almost every childhood disease you could think of. Pneumonia, measles, mumps, you name it. I never had polio, thank God, but I had polio shots. So, but as an adult, I seldom got sick. You know, occasionally I had, about this time every year, especially it was on the East Coast, I would come down with allergies. I have hay fever. But one reason I like Texas, on the East Coast, I would always get runny eyes, sneezing. It was horrendous. In Dallas, believe it or not, I get very, very mild symptoms that are easily treated with either Sudafed or Actifed. So I seldom really have what I used to have all the time on the East Coast when I lived in New York and New Jersey. But when I lived in Dallas or on the West Coast in California, I had very, very mild symptoms or no symptoms, and they usually came late. And the first frost, no more hay fever. But a lot of people have allergies in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I have many friends that have allergies. But those are mild. And the problem is, okay, you could have an allergy, you could have a cold, but you could have something serious. That's why you typically are recommended to go to the doctor. I don't follow that suggestion because I usually research what I have. Because hospitals and doctor's office, believe it or not, are very dangerous places. And one of the vectors for the outbreaks of Ebola, and this is in Africa, both in Zaire and Sudan, and now in Liberia, is people naturally go to their doctor or hospital, assuming they can have one. And remember, many of these countries are very, very poor. People live in remote villages. There's not doctors in every village, you can believe that, and they have to make a trip just to go to a hospital, and the care is not the greatest. Many times you have marginally trained people. Many of them are, for example, nuns, sisters, that some have medical training, but most of them don't. And what happens is they go to one of these so-called hospitals or clinics. I wouldn't really call it a hospital. At best, it's a clinic with some beds. And that's where the disease actually spreads. Now, one thing that, and again, I'm recommending this book, The Coming Plague by Laura Garrett. And I have, for those that are new to the show, the way you listen to the show is you go to the pronkpops.wordpress.com, my companion blog for this show. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have links to the last 60 to 80 shows. At the very bottom, you'll have links to my entire portfolio of shows, with the exception of some of the early shows that were lost. I think we lost 7. But in between, you'll have a lot of information. That could be YouTube videos, it could be articles, it could be cartoons, it could be photos, it could be charts, graphs. And I'm really starting to get smart on this. I don't pretend to be an expert on Ebola or tuberculosis. My expertise is primarily in economics, business, although initially I was a science major in physics, but quickly learned I wasn't the smartest one in the room and quickly changed my major, which I didn't know at the time. But most people, especially freshmen, change their major 1, 2, or 3 times. Well, that's what I did because I was taking physics at the time. And I can remember this distinctly. I looked to my left. I looked at to the right. I saw the grades. I saw my grade. And I said, well, you know, I put in a lot of effort and I didn't get a very good, I don't think I got a bad grade. I don't recall the number, but it was not good. And I said, man, the people on the left and the right are doing a lot better than I. And this was early in the course. I think I need to make a change. And it was the smartest thing I ever did. And that's not unusual because most people, especially young people, don't know what they were going to do. I was going to become a nuclear physicist. Well, that didn't last very long. Reality set in, so I quickly scrambled and changed my major. So my expertise is not in the sciences. I've always been interested in it, and I've been considering taking a number of science courses for the fun of it. Now, most people don't take science courses today for the fun of it because they're not necessarily easy, but I'm naturally curious and read a lot. Now, I'm telling you that because I'm getting up to speed on this subject rather as fast as I can, and why I'm concerned about this, and you should be concerned about this. Now, I like to connect the dots. And I always say, okay, what are they talking about? And I mean the press as well as politicians, and what are they not talking about? And that's important because I've seen it here at Richland College. Most of your journalism majors, not not yours truly, but most of your journalism majors are very idealistic, and they tend to have a political philosophy that's left of center, call it liberal, call it progressive, and they're primarily Democrats, and they were big supporters of Barack Obama. Now, that's beginning to change. I'm not. I'm very much a classical liberal. I believe in a Republican form of government. I believe in limited government and how limited you could cut it in half, the federal government, and keep on cutting. It's totally out of control. Now, that's so you understand where I'm coming from. I'm not your typical liberal or progressive on this at all, and I'm concerned when the rule of law in especially regarding immigration and its enforcement, is continually being violated by both President Bush when he was president as well as President Barack Obama. We, in effect, have open borders. If you can get to the interior of the United States today, so-called sanctuary cities, your chances of being deported or removed from the United States are slim and none. Really, the only people when they get in the interior that have a chance, a slim chance of being deported are people with criminal records, both in the United States and from their country of origin. In essence, if you can get to a sanctuary city such as Dallas, you're not going to be deported. The government is not putting the resources in the interior of the country to do that. And that's the responsibility of Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement Agency, abbreviated ICE. Now, all the attention today is on the borders, and that's by both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And all the attention, and I'm guilty of this, is on the impact, for example, on the American worker. And I'm not going to do that show. I've done that show several times. The only thing I will say is don't believe the 11 to 12 million figure you continually hear in the news. There are 11 to 12 million people in the shadows. They're not in the shadows. They're on this campus. They're all over Dallas, and they're all over about 10 states that have the most of the illegal aliens. And that is Texas, California, New York, New Jersey, Illinois, Georgia, North Carolina, Washington, and I probably left out one or two. That's where the majority of the illegal aliens are. That's where they're living. That's where they're working. However, that doesn't mean that's the only place they are. Now, you should be concerned because it's not 11 to 12. It's somewhere between 30 and 50 million. And that's impacting on the unemployment rate being persistently high, over 6%. And that's really being understated by the fact you have a lot of Americans that have been so discouraged by the economic environment, they're no longer looking for jobs. And those that are looking and find them find part-time jobs. And that is a big problem amongst young people that are either high school graduates or dropouts in the same college graduates or dropouts, finding jobs today and getting on the career ladder and finding your first job, your second and third, getting skill sets. Now, what's part of the problem? The same outfit that's responsible for that 11 to 12 million estimate, they estimate about 8 million people are illegal aliens are actually working here. Again, I don't believe either sets of numbers because if you talk to people and the U.S. Border Patrol, and especially people that, for example, used to work for Immigration Naturalization Service, an associate general counsel, and this is where I'm getting my information from, he makes the point that for every one apprehension at the border in the past, and these are eight-year-old numbers, and I think it's gotten worse, not better. The conservative number is 3 to 5 people actually do not get caught and make it to Dallas, Fort Worth, Arlington, Houston, as well as cities across the United States, but mainly concentrated in those 6 to 10 states where you have a high concentration of people from both Mexico and Central America, including Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. Now, I give you this number for a reason. If 3 to 5 are getting away, and let's say one of the 3 to 5 comes home. That means 2 to 4 people minimum, remember this is the low estimate, are actually staying. They're staying and working. They're here illegally, they get fraudulent documents, and they're working. All of those are crimes. One's a misdemeanor, 2 of them are felonies. They're breaking the law, and you don't reward criminal behavior, because if you reward criminal behavior, what do you get? You get more criminal behavior. And my focus in the past has been just on the impact in jobs. Now, let me give you why it's 30 to 50 million. Up until the Obama administration came in, the apprehension numbers in terms of what the U.S. Border Patrol actually captured was about 1 million. It's going to jump around every year. It was higher than 1 million, some years lower, but on average is about 1 million per year, which means 2 to 4 million per year are staying here. Now, this has been going on for 15 years. So you can do the math, somewhere between 30 and 50 million, and probably more, are illegal aliens staying here. You don't hear the press telling you that number. Everyone repeats the 11 to 12 million number as if it were gospel. Yet if you go to the people that actually patrol the border, their supervisors and the actual U.S. patrol, they will tell you. Yeah, we cap for every one that we actually get our hands on and detain, 3 to 5 minimum. And this is before Obama, in June 15th of 2012, gave a temporary 2-year moratorium on deportations, the so-called DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, made that speech that I think, and a lot of other people think, is the main cause for all these illegal immigrants, or illegal aliens is what I prefer calling them, because that technically is the legal and appropriate definition. They are aliens, and they are here illegally. The so-called undocumented workers, or the joke is the undocumented Democrats. So if instead of 11 to 12 million, there's 30 to 50, and I don't know the number. I'm not a demographer, I'm not an expert, but I think the people that you need to talk to first and foremost are the people patrolling the border. And why it's worse today is, what has the U.S. Border Patrol been doing for almost the last year? It's been taking care of these unaccompanied so-called children aliens. They're really teenagers, folks. And I suspect 10-20% are not teenagers, but I'm not an expert. And they're keeping the lid on this very tight. Yes, there have been some congressmen and senators actually getting in, but no photographs, no videos, no asking questions. You know, I immediately said, what are they hiding? Well, one thing they're hiding, a lot of these people, and this is where I first got onto this story. A friend of mine knows a lady that's here illegally. He works with her. And he was asking me, have you heard of a program that the children of illegals can come here and come to the border, and they'll call their parents and send them on their way with a bus ticket or a plane? I said, no. I said, and I wouldn't have the lady go down there because they probably might detain her and deport her. And about that same time, the story started to appear. What's happening is the children of illegals that are already here living and working, as a result of Obama's announcement over two years ago, are now sending for their children. That's why they're coming. And it's dangerous, and I don't want to get into that, but there's an angle to this that is not, there's been some mention, but not really emphasized. And here's what they're not talking about. Not all of these children, and probably not a majority, but a significant minority, have contagious diseases. And some of these contagious diseases, such as TB, can be latent. They have it, and why? They come from countries where you have poverty, high density of population, malnutrition. And those are the places where TB thrives. And you don't have much medical care, if any. Now, what are we doing? We're sending these children all over, I said children, they're teenagers primarily, all over the United States. They're being cared for by not only the U.S. Border Patrol, but the Department of Homeland Security, as well as higher security outfits. Now, what's the problem that we're overlooking? Contagious diseases. The people at work, including the U.S. Border Patrol, have families. They go home at night, and what's happening is they can spread this to their children and their spouses, who in turn can go to school and spread these contagious diseases to the people at their schools. Right now, parents are getting their children ready to go back to school, making sure they have their vaccinations all in order so they can go to school. No real concern or emphasis has been given on the fact that these teenagers have been spread out all over the United States. Many of them are disease carriers, contagious disease carriers. And some of them, probably many of them, will be in your school, whether you know it or not. That's the danger. And TB is a killer. Over 2 million people die every year of TB. Now, it's mostly in what used to be called undeveloped or emerging countries, where they don't really have, people don't have access to medical care and antibiotics. And even if they do, many of those TBs are resistant to antibiotics. So that's where I'm trying to make the connection. And you notice why the director of CDC was on the television show Sunday. I don't have a TV at home. When I'm home, I'm either sleeping or reading primarily. But he was. And he's talking about the Ebola virus, and people should be concerned about it. But what is the director of the Center for Disease Control not talking about? He's not talking about TB. Now, yes, it kills. The difference is about 1% of the people that actually develop TB. Not latent, but they actually develop TB. About 1% actually die. But given the sheer numbers of people in the world that have TB, about a third of the world's population, it's one of the deadliest diseases, and it's a bacteria. It's not in the same league as Ebola, but it is deadly, and it's spread, and it's airborne. That's another difference. It's spread by people coughing, for example. And you can spread it to your family and people that you have close proximity to at work or at school. We need a conversation on this, because I am concerned not only about the employment impacts upon the American worker and the American citizen, I'm also concerned about the impact of the health of the American people. I live in Dallas. I live in an apartment complex. And most of the workers are illegal aliens. I know that they can't speak a word of English. And it's a constant turnover. I know they either came from Mexico or Central America. Now, some speak English, but most don't. And I go to stores, and I know the people stocking the shelves are illegal aliens, because Dallas is a sanctuary city and welcomes them. But they're welcoming people that, because they have not taken precautions, namely been treated and vaccinated, are disease carriers. It's not all of them. It's not a majority of them, but it's a significant minority. And I want the Center for Disease Control, that director, to speak to this issue. He needs to, because this is a danger to every American. I'm not so much worried about Ebola, because I'm not in Africa. I'm not eating bushmeat. And the state of the United States, we have much better health care, as well as public hygiene, clean water, that you don't find in many of the nations of Africa. So this is probably going to be the start of a series of shows on this as I get smarter. But it is a dimension to the illegal alien situation that I think you need to start thinking about. It should scare you, especially if you have small children or if you're elderly. Because if your immune system is not developed in the case of children, or is diminished in case of the elderly because of an illness, that's when TB raises its ugly head and becomes active, and it could be lethal or deadly to you. Now for my closing music. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinions of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. Thank you for listening. And Charlie, I'll probably be listening to your show tonight. Have a great evening. Bye-bye.